Our brother Clyde Sylvan will provide us the words of encouragement this morning. Brother Clyde.
Well, good morning, everyone. I just have to check my eyes here. I got my different glasses on, and this morning I can see you, but I can't see this. So we'll see how that goes. Recently, I was reminiscing on my first, at least one of my first exhortations that would have been given at the old King's Road Hall, 55 years ago maybe, and it was on Gideon. So it was with interest that I saw that the reading from Gideon was up for this morning. And I remember holding forth on the fleece and the sippers and the lappers. That was big because we heard that at all the conferences about the fleece and the lappers. Now, the fleece, which we'll have a few things to say at least about it in a moment, is an appealing drama about Gideon basically talking with God, as I see it. And the sippers and the lappers were kind of a strange way of sorting out an army that needed to go from 30,000 to about 300, for reasons which we will see. So, ending up with probably 300 of the most incapable, improbable soldiers. So, the record states in chapter 5, verse 31, that the land had rest for 40 years. And this, of course, chronicles the sad cycle of the nation in the land of promise, following their God and reaping the benefits of his bounty, then in their times of plenty, turning to the gods of the surrounding nations and reaping the benefits of that choice, a choice they often made during their long history. So whatever the account of Gideon is about, I suggest to you it is a classic illustration of what Paul says in 2 Corinthians 12, where the Lord speaks to Paul in his weakness and says to him, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness." Whatever else Gideon is, he is an account of the weakness of the people of God, but the people of God that he chooses to use against the overwhelming strength of the enemy. Strength out of weakness. It is an account of God's methods of projecting his own strength through the experience of this human weakness. And it shouldn't be lost to any of us as we go through this reading. So the more prosperous we become, the more we rely on ourselves and not on God. We are in our greatest spiritual danger when we stop feeling the need to listen, to rely, and to have faith. And that is sad, but it's true. So, welcome to Gideon's world, chapter 6, verse 1. The people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord gave them into the hand of the Midianites for 7 years. Israel had failed to remove the Canaanites from the land, as they had been instructed to do. You may notice that the Canaanites are mentioned 15 times in the first 3 chapters of Judges, which has to be highly symbolic of what was going on here. So the result over time, the Canaanites and the Canaanite lifestyle had weakened the Israelites. And that left them at the mercy of anything that came along, now including marauding bands of Midianites overpowering Israel. And because of Midian, the people of Israel made for themselves the dens that are in the mountains and the caves and the strongholds. They had to thresh their grain underground. Not the best way to thresh grain. Now, whenever the Israelites planted crops, the Midianites and the Amalekites and the people of the east would come up against them, steal the crops and any products that were created. They would encamp against them and devour the produce of the land as far as Gaza, and leave no sustenance in Israel and no sheep or ox or donkey. For they would come up with their livestock and their tents. They would come up like locusts in number. Both they and their camels could not be counted. So that they laid waste the land as they came in. It was terrifying. It was overwhelming. It was oppressive. Imagine Israel promised people of the living God were living under the constant threat of marauders who would swarm in and pillage the land and the crops. The Midianites and Amalekites were like locusts in abundance, chapter 7, verse 12. So they were living underground. They were living in fear of their oppressors. Their world was completely turned upside down. This was no longer the Israel of God. And so it says, and Israel was brought very low because of Midian. And then the people of Israel cried out to the Lord for help. And before we look at that, let's consider Gideon's world as our world for a minute or two. Turned upside down, dispensing with the living God. No laws except laws for the powerful and the privileged. Now you may all know that there's an encampment a mile or so east of us from where we're assembled this morning that supports the enemies of God, who would probably quickly take over our parking lot if we posted a sign that indicated our affiliation with Israel or our truth regarding, for example, gender. If not taking over the parking lot, they would probably at least launch a digital mob that would publicly lynch us. We have, for the most part, given our lives over to the Canaanites, their gods and their ways, and now we are susceptible to the oppression of the random, societal, destroying raids of the Midianites. Our lives are becoming jammed up with media, social platforms, misinformation, and outright brainwashing. Major drug chains subject to hacking and blackmail. $35 million, London drugs. Provincial departments where our information is stored. Piracy is now a large part of our lives. They shout down any belief in God. They make right wrong and wrong right. Men can become women and women can become men. Abortion on demand. Medical assistance in dying. The list goes on and on. Our spirituality is under attack constantly, being oppressed daily by the insane Midianite hordes that have taken over our world. The great inversion, actually, is well underway. And why would we expect not? The Apostle Paul spoke of the great deception, delusion, that has society spinning in confusion. Just take a walk downtown and ask, can anybody please tell me what's going on here? Well, we are literally living in hiding, silently living undercover, threshing our grain in our wine cellars while we let our lives play out subject to the Midianites. And we need an illustration. We always do. And the most obvious illustration to me is my cell phone. What started as a very useful tool for communication and business 25 years ago has become a disaster. On any given Monday, I can record 20 to 25 invasions of my privacy with spurious evil spam calls, emails, and texts. This onslaught is quickly rendering what was a useful device into one that is oppressive and will soon have lost any value, except, of course, as a platform for pirates, malicious creeps, and other vile and ungodly people. We lost over $5,500 in one sophisticated scam against our company last year, even as our company computer tech was struggling to abort it. I'm beginning to call them the Midianites, who constantly I have to hide and cover from. But there is hope. Enough of that. Israel cried out to the Lord on account of the Midianites. This is where it goes, verse 8. And the Lord sent them a prophet. Now we started the chapter with a narrative. Now we move on to a prophet. We're going to get to an angel in a moment or two. And the prophet comes and says, thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel. You cried out to me. I've come to talk to you. I led you up from Egypt and brought you out of the house of slavery so you wouldn't be slaves, so you wouldn't be oppressed. And I delivered you from the hand of the Egyptians, where you were slaves for hundreds of years, and brought you out of oppression into the land of promise. And I drove out the people before you who could oppress you there. And I said to you, I am the Lord your God, and you shall not fear the Ammonites, in whose land you dwell. So in a sense, what's the problem here? Well, the prophet says, but in light of all that, you have not obeyed my voice. You have not obeyed my voice. In other words, for some strange reason, you want me to listen to you, but you don't want to listen to me. You cry out to me because you want me to listen to you, but you don't want to listen to me. There are consequences. We often don't think so. However, the cry has gone out. Now the angel of the Lord came and sat under the oak tree at Ophrah, which belonged to Joash the Abiezrite. I had to say that a few times to get it, so I didn't make a mess of it up here. I think it's Abiezrite. I think Stephen had it. While his son Gideon was beating out wheat in the winepress to hide from the Midianites. So here he is threshing in his winepress, which is interesting that they had a winepress, but he had to harvest his wheat and beat it out there. Now, grain, of course, was harvested and found in sheaves in those days. It was then threshed or beaten outside so that the wind could blow the chaff away and the heavier grain would separate. You thresh grain outside, not in a basement or a wine cellar. Now, if it was me responding to Gideon, I probably would have said something with a touch of sarcasm. Hey, Gideon, what's up, boy? That's not the way to thresh grain. Happily, it wasn't me who answered. It was the angel who intervened. An angel of the Lord addressed and appeared to him and said, "The Lord is with you, O mighty man of valor." What? What mighty man of valor? Threshing his grain in the winepress to avoid detection from the Midianite hordes. Indeed. However, not so fast. Here is a merciful truth, as I see it, brothers and sisters. God sees the end from the beginning, of course. He sees what we will be. He understands our shortcomings. He understands our fears, and actually comes to us in our holes. Now, the angel engages Gideon. It's important that we understand the three enemies Gideon is facing, especially because there actually are three enemies. The first one was understanding the enemy that surrounded him, the oppressive, marauding Midianites, hundreds of thousands of them. Number one, facing the enemy that surrounds us. Number two, understanding and facing the enemy that is among us. You got that part, didn't you? His family was involved. Gideon's family was involved. Number three, understanding the enemy that is within us. And that is our own personal fears, our own personal misgivings. Well, first, the enemy that surrounds us. We need to sort this out, of course. It often appears to be very big, as it did to Gideon, and he said to him, "Please, my Lord, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? And where are all the wonderful deeds that our fathers recounted to us, saying, 'Did not the Lord bring you up from the land of Egypt?'" Remember what the prophet just told them. "But now the Lord has forsaken us and given us into the hand of Midian." Now the angel didn't say, "Well, the reason is because you didn't want to listen to God." He didn't, of course. The Lord turned to him and said, "Go in this might of yours and save Israel from the hand of Midian. Do not I send you?" And he said to him, "Please, Lord, how can I save Israel? Look at the vast multitude that we're faced with here. Behold, my clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least of my father's house." And the Lord said to him, "But I will be with you, and you will strike the Midianites as one man." So we can look at the numbers. We like to do that. they were too big, really, from a human point of view. However, it's a matter of understanding the larger perspective here. And Gideon says to the angel, now if I found favor in your eyes, then show me a sign. And you have a little struggle with Gideon in relation to his faith and why do you want signs and so on. But remember, he's got a real task ahead of him. And he's talking to the Lord about this. He says, if I can just bring an offering, verse 18, please do not depart from me until I have come with my present, he said, which is an offering, and I'll set it before you. And the angel said, I'll stay until you return. And again, God has no problem with our silly questions and uncertainties, our lack of faith. God is patient with our insecurities as we face the oppression of the hordes, and I'm sure has no problem with us asking a few questions. So Gideon goes home and prepares a young goat and unleavened cakes and ephah flour, puts the meat in a basket, and he gets some broth, he puts it in a pot, and he brings it out and places it before the angel of the Lord. And the angel of the Lord tells him how to set it up on the rock that was before them, pour the broth over the top, and so on. And the angel of the Lord reached up the tip of the staff that was in his hand and touched the meat, and fire sprang up from the rock miraculously and consumed the meat and the unleavened cakes. And the angel of the Lord vanished from his sight. So Gideon perceived that it was indeed the angel of the Lord. And that was a problem for Gideon as well. And he says, alas, O Lord God, for now I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face. The Lord said to him, peace be to you. Do not fear. You will not die. And Gideon built an altar there and called it the Lord is peace. Gideon was sort of ready to go against enemy number one. But then there was enemy number two. That very night, in verse 25, the Lord said to him, take your father's bull and the second bull, 7 years old, and pull down the altar of Baal that your father has. That's a tough one. That your father has. And cut down the Asherah poles, the wood, as the others render it, that is beside. There are groves of trees around these altars of Baal. Cut down the trees, take the other bull that he's got, sacrifice it with a fire made by the wood. So Gideon took 10 men of his servants and did as the Lord had told him, but because he was too afraid of his family and the men of the town, he did not do it by day, he did it by night. Can I just take some of my servants, Lord? Do I have to go on my own? Can I go at night? When I was 19, giving my education at Gideon, I would have said, don't be a wimp, go in the daytime where people can see it, where everybody can see it. Now, I think I'd go at night. I think I'd go at night. As many of my servants, hopefully they would come. It doesn't matter, just get it done. Gideon goes in and destroys the altar of Baal. That's exactly as the angel instructs him. And you can imagine that in the morning, there was a huge uprising within the town saying, who has done this thing? These were Baal worshippers. These were people who worshipped in the groves. And somebody had gone in and desecrated the whole place during night. They checked out the whole city and they found out it was Gideon, Joash's son. He's done this thing. And the men of the town said to Joash, it takes me a bit to process this. Bring out your son, he's going to die. For he has broken down the altar of Baal and cut down the Asherah poles beside it. Imagine, what a terrible thing. But Joash said to all who stood against him, well, you contend for Baal? Excuse me, what are you saying here? You need to get rid of somebody who destroyed Baal? Will you try and save Baal? If any more of you contend for Baal, they're going to be put to death by morning, says Gideon's dad. If he's a god, let him contend for himself. Exactly. Because his altar has been broken down? What are you worried about it for? Let Baal take care of it. Full marks Gideon's dad. In other words, let Baal do his own killing. If he's a god at all, he will. really quite simple, isn't it? We worship these images when they don't even protect themselves. The age-old question. Now this, of course, angered the Midianites because that was their God. And somebody had defamed and defaced it. Well, what would they do? They would take care of Gideon. They would take care of Gideon. The Midianites and the Amalekites and the people of the east came together and they crossed the Jordan and encamped in the valley of Jezreel. It's 135,000 man army of the Midianites camping on the other side, on Gideon's side of the Jordan in the valley. But in verse 34, the Spirit of the Lord clothed Gideon like in a garment. The Spirit of the Lord clothed Gideon, and he sounded the trumpet. He sounded the trumpet because he wanted to raise his own army. And he sent messengers out to the Abiezrites. Verse 35, he calls out to Manasseh for them to follow. He was of the tribe of Manasseh, remember? He sends out a call to Asher, Zebulun, Naphtali, the tribes that were up in the north. They all went up to meet him in this amazing standoff. They had come to get Gideon. Now that's the enemy that is within us, enemy number three. Perhaps easily the most challenging enemy we ever encounter when we finally come, and when he finally came to encounter 135,000 men in this vicious, crazy Midianite army. Those are the moments when we face our worst fears, the enemy that is within us, our lack of faith. It's about me, which brings us to the sign of the fleece, which I believe is a personal exchange between Gideon and God. Gideon is what we would say binary. He's like, is the fleece wet or is it dry? Is the soil wet or is it dry? There's a binary choice, yes or no. At the same time, in this personal exchange, using the personal pronouns five or six times from verse 36 to verse 40. This was about Gideon saying to the Lord, I need to know, yes or no. And I believe that because if you go to Judges chapter 6, verse 22, for a little bit of personal study sometime, you'll find that Gideon created an ephod. He wasn't a priest. Remember, the priest had the ephod, which had the breastplate where the yes and the no was manifested to the priest in relation to instructing the tribe of Israel. I think that's what this was all about. Gideon wasn't tempting the Lord. He wasn't testing the Lord. He wasn't showing a lack of faith. He was just communicating the way the nation should have been communicating. Now, Zerubbabel, verse 1 of chapter 7, we have to go into chapter 7 now, and all the people who were with him rose early and encamped against the spring at Harod, and the camp of Midian was north of them by the hill of Morah in the valley. Gideon on the other side of the valley with his 32,000 volunteers. And the Lord said to Gideon, you've got too many people. You've got too many people. You can't go and take on 135,000 men Midianite army with 32,000 people. Too many people for me to give the Midianites into your hand, lest Israel boast after getting delivered, saying, oh, my own hand did this. But come on, 32,000 to get 135,000? Now therefore proclaim in the ears of the people, saying, whoever is fearful, trembling, let him return home. And it says, hurry away from Mount Gilead. Just get them out of here. 22,000 people return to their homes, to their tents. And 10,000 remain. The Lord said to Gideon, too many, still too many people. Take them down to the water and test them there. We'll see how they drink the water. It's not a binary choice. These people drink this way and these people laugh like a dog and so on. So count them up. And with the 300 men who left, I will save you and give the Midianites into your hand. And let all the others go, every man to his home. Well, there's one more confirmation the Lord gives Gideon, just to settle the matter. He tells him to go down into the camp of the Midianites in the evening. And they listen to a discussion going on in the tent of a couple of the Midianite soldiers. And one of them had seen a dream. And the other one interpreted the dream and said, this dream is no other than about the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. God has given into his hand Midian and all the camp. That's all Gideon needs. As soon as Gideon heard the telling of the dream and the interpretation, he worshipped the Lord. He returned to the camp of Israel and said, arise, for the Lord has given the host of Midian into your hands. He divides the camp of 300 men into three companies. He puts trumpets in the hands of them all, clay jars, and torches inside the clay jars. I know we know all this from Sunday school, but it's quite interesting. Here they are, divided into groups of 100 on the hillside around the Midianite camp. And he said to the people, look at me and do what I do. When I blow the trumpet, I and all who are with me blow their trumpets on every side of the camp and shout, the Lord and for Gideon. For the Lord and for Gideon. Not for the sword of Gideon and the Lord, but for the Lord and for Gideon. We know the end of it. Gideon defeats the Midianites. The three companies blew the trumpets, broke the jars. They held on their left hands and the torches. At the same time, trumpets in their right hand. And there's this noise and this crashing and this fire. And they shouted out, a sword for the Lord and for Gideon. Every man stood in his place in the camp and all the army ran. Midianite army, 125,000, they ran. They cried out as they fled. They were horrified. When they blew the 300 trumpets, the Lord set every man's sword, Midianite sword, against his comrade and against all the army. Gideon didn't even have a sword. Just 300 good old boys with some clay pots and torches and trumpets. From the strange way that the Lord had Gideon whittled down the size of his army to the fact that in the end, they didn't even have swords. Only trumpets, pots smashed, torches, and the fear of the Lord throwing the Midianites into confusion. And they, the Midianites, destroyed themselves. So how do we end this? What is our call to action? Gideon is only mentioned within four chapters of Judges, and only in two of those is he mentioned as Gideon. He's called by his other name. However, he's also listed with great men of faith in Hebrews chapter 11. Gideon, including Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, and Samuel, and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, enforced justice, obtained promises, escaped the edge of the sword, were made strong out of weakness. Here it is. Became mighty in war. A guy who was threshing his wheat in his wine cellar. Put foreign armies to flight. Hebrews 11, 33 and 34. Gideon blew a trumpet, rallied the forces of Israel. He only needed a 300-man army, mostly for blowing trumpets and smashing pots. The Lord sent the Midianites into confusion, and they destroyed themselves. So the question is not about putting the fleece out or sipping or laughing. The question is, are we prepared to blow our trumpets? Are we prepared to blow our trumpets? And will the Lord clothe us with his Spirit to prepare us for the battle that must be waged? Will the Lord clothe us with his Spirit? And I know our theology doesn't allow for much of this. However, maybe it is time that it should, as we are surrounded by these crazed Midianites. So for those of us who feel overwhelmed by the enemy, for those of us who feel overwhelmed by the enemy, who feel crushed by our own sense of weakness. And to those of us who have become increasingly reliant on the enemies that surround us, may these thoughts, random as they may be, turn us again to the scriptures and again to Christ, who makes his power clear within the very obvious nature of our weakness. We will be victorious over the enemy that is around us. We will be victorious over the enemy that is among us. And especially, we will be victorious over the enemy that is within us. And so finally, turning our hearts to Jesus, remembering what Paul said, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. We will be victorious over the enemies we face through Christ, our Savior. We come to meet him this morning. Amen.